Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is September 19th for us here in the U.S. right now, 2024. If we just heard a nice kookaburra over in Australia in the future, he is ready for us to get into this episode. He's got a lot of thoughts. He's out shining teeth.
Stop talking. Get on with it.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to hear the chat. But we're actually not going to chat too much because, one, we're recording like two regular episodes right now. So, well, this one is kind of like the normal one because I was going to say it's going to come out later. But we also feel like it's going to be a long episode because we're talking about Aisha Degree today, which is a case that a lot of people have requested over the years. A lot of people have really followed this case for a long time. It's very mysterious. I guess you could say it was a cold case, essentially, for a while.
Yeah,
not that they ever gave up on it. 24
years old now, yeah.
Yeah, it just didn't really seem to ever go anywhere. But lately, it's been in the news again because it seems like there's some stuff going on and there's new information coming out. So we figured it would be a good time to do the episode because not everyone knows the story, or it's been for so long that sometimes you forget the story, or some people know about it vaguely. And if you're going to follow the updates, you got to know the whole story.
When we first started posting about the updates that were happening in this case on our Instagram, people were writing things like, this is one case I never thought would be solved. This is up there with kind of Maura Murray and the kind of more infamous early 2000s true crime cases. So it's heartening to see that maybe there will be some resolution. It seems like they are definitely making progress, which we'll get into towards the end because we'll go through it chronologically. But a case that is unexpectedly having some developments.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about it before. It's nice to see that with all the advances in technology, that since evidence and stuff is preserved, as long as they were able to maybe get some DNA type evidence or things back in the day and preserve it, as science advances, they're able to run new tests on that stuff. So hopefully more and more older cases and cold cases will get solved this way. That seems like what is kind of pointing them in a new direction with this case.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like they've gotten lucky too, because there seems to have been a whole bunch of stuff still available for them to seize in these new developments, which we'll elaborate more on. But they've been, like, it's not like, you know, they went and the site is gone, for example, like it's been knocked down or demolished, they were able to still, seems like, gather things that may help the investigation. Only this past week, so more than 24 and a half years later, they were have seemingly gotten very lucky.
Crazy.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll just get right on into it for maybe the first time ever in our lives.
Missing person, her name's Aisha DeGree.
Aisha DeGree was 9 years old when she vanished. Detectives say witnesses told them they saw her pulled into a green car like this. Investigators say she had no contact with her family, no footprints on social media, or listed genealogy profile. And the search warrants say, based on those findings, investigators believe Aisha DeGree was a victim of homicide with her body concealed.
We need to investigate that.
The warrants point to this moment, 1 year after Aisha disappeared, as a key factor. Construction workers in Burke County found trash bags with Aisha's clothes inside. They say a hair sample from Aisha's undershirt matched the DNA of a 13-year-old daughter of the suspects Roy Lee Dedman and Connie Elliott Dedman. Owners of several properties searched by federal and state agents last week. The warrants say the other DNA found in the bag belongs to a man who was a resident of this rest home in Vail, owned by the Dedmans. Warrants say employees here told investigators they were told that Roy Lee Dedman would send his 16 to 17-year-old daughter to transport patients. The warrants went on to say that due to the age of Dedman's daughters at the time that Aisha disappeared, adult assistance from Roy and Connie Dedman would have been necessary in the execution and or concealment of the crime.
Aisha DeGree was 9 years old when she went missing from Shelby, North Carolina, and this was on February 14th, 2000. Aisha was born on August 5th, 1990 to Harold and Aquila DeGree. Her parents had been married on Valentine's Day in 1988, which is weird because that's when she went missing.
Yeah, also, their wedding anniversary was the anniversary of her going missing.
They also had another child, a son named O'Brien. He was born in 1989, so he was 1 year older than her. The family lived in a house on Oakcrest Drive in Shelby.
So I have seen some articles report that they live in an apartment. I've looked up the address. It looks like a house to me, but I'm assuming maybe it was split into separate apartments, units. So like if you're wondering, it doesn't really matter. I just wanted to kind of clarify in case you thought they lived in it. It's not, definitely not a high-rise apartment complex. It's like a single-story house that may be split up into separate family units.
Yeah. So Shelby is a city in Cleveland County in North Carolina, and the population was 21,918 at the 2020 census. The 2022 crime rate in Shelby, North Carolina, is 370, which is 1.5 times higher than the U.S. average, and it was higher than 92.5% of U.S. cities, so I guess it could be a dangerous area.
And obviously, that's a 2022 data, so it's quite a while after this happened, but it's hard to find reliable data from 2002, but it kind of gives you a general picture of the area and how it has developed over time as well.
In 2000, Harold worked as a dock loader at the time, and Aquila worked for a piano manufacturer. We also read that Harold had multiple jobs and would do shift work, so he didn't always have like a set schedule. Sometimes he worked late. Sometimes he worked early, could work overnight, so he just had varying hours, it seemed. The kids, they would let themselves in when they got home after school and were told to behave and do their homework while their parents were at work. They were expected to have their homework and chores done by the time their parents got home. Aquila said that their life was very family-oriented, and they focused on school and church. They didn't have a computer in their home, and the children didn't socialize much outside of their close family circle. Aquila said in a 2013 interview, "Every time you turned on the TV, there was some pedophile who had lured somebody's child away via the internet." So just like saying basically why they didn't have a computer.
And it's also kind of preempting questions about Aisha's motives for leaving. You know, did she meet someone online? So that's why, like, you know, it kind of seems like a random fact to throw in. But that basically they're reiterating that she wouldn't have had any way to have met someone.
Yeah. Aquila said that Aisha was a well-behaved and reliable child who was cautious and shy. She was content to stay within the limits that her parents had set for her. Her mother said she was scared to death of dogs and never thought she would go out of the house.
And not even just scared, like scared to death as in terrified. You know, some kids are a little bit wary of dogs, but it seems like Aisha was so terrified that she wouldn't go anywhere without her parents. Well, they didn't think that she would go anywhere without them anyway.
Yeah. In 2000, Aisha was in fourth grade at Falston Elementary School, and on Friday, February 11th, the schools were closed that day, but Harold and Aquila still had to work, so Aisha and her brother O'Brien spent the day at their aunt's house. Later in the day, they both had basketball practice at the school. Aisha played her first basketball game of the season on February 12th, so the following day. Aisha was fouled out and her team lost, and her parents said that she was really upset about this and cried with her teammates after the game. But later in the day, she cheered up a bit and was able to go watch her brother's game. On Sunday, February 13th, the children went to church from a relative's home, and then they returned back to their own homes. So that night, the kids went to bed around 8 p.m. that night. They shared a bedroom and nothing was said to be amiss, nothing strange going on. And then at 9 p.m. that night, the power went out in the neighborhood from a car accident. You know, that happens sometimes if tree
hit a pole or something.
I mean, if they hit a pole or maybe they have to turn off the power for whatever reason. So the power came back on around 12:30 a.m. and this would bring us to Monday, February 14th. There's some varying information here, which is kind of inevitable with this case considering how long it's been and how long ago it happened. But we believe that Harold worked the night of February 13th, so like the 13th going into the 14th. And most reports say that he got home around midnight, so it'd be midnight of the 14th. Harold said that he went and checked on the kids and said they were both asleep in their beds. He said he checked on them again before he went to bed at 2:30 a.m.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Grow connects you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights and weekends. There are no subscriptions, no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/try now today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/try now. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Some reports say at some point after 2:30, O'Brien heard Aisha get up to use the bathroom. She returned to the bedroom and O'Brien said he heard Aisha's bed make a squeak. I think we can all understand that when you get in and out of bed, the mattress or the bed frame will squeak. He said that he assumed that she was moving and getting comfortable and didn't look to see what was happening. So it didn't seem strange to him. But Aisha was not asleep. She actually got out of bed, got her book bag and her Tweety Bird purse, which she had previously packed with clothes and personal items, and walked out of the house. The Tweety Bird purse gets me.
So innocent. It's so horrible that she packed a sweet little purse to go and...
I know. I feel like I had a Tweety Bird purse. After she left the house, both a passing truck driver and motorist would later tell authorities that they saw Aisha between 3:45 and 4:15 a.m., walking south along Highway 18. They both said Aisha was wearing a white long-sleeved shirt and white pants. So I feel like it's pretty believable that it probably was her, considering the circumstances in the story, and they both saw her wearing the same thing. So it's not like one person maybe saw something, but the fact they have two confirmed people, same outfit. Yeah. So I think that's pretty promising. The motorist said that he turned his car around because he thought that it was strange for such a small child to be out by herself at that hour. He circled the area three times, and it seems like she probably got spooked by this and she ran into the woods and vanished. That night, it was very rainy and stormy, so obviously not great conditions to be out in the woods. Law enforcement would later say they thought both of these sightings were credible. County Sheriff Dan Crawford said, "We're pretty sure it was her because the descriptions they gave are consistent with what we know she was wearing." He added that they also saw her at the same place heading in the same direction. Aquila woke up at 5:45 a.m. on February 14th and ran a bath for the kids. They'd been unable to bathe the night before due to that power outage. So she went into the kids' bedrooms to wake them up before their alarm, which was set for 6:30, but only O'Brien was in the room. Aquila initially thought Aisha must have woken up early, so she started searching around the house, the vehicles, the property, but she was nowhere to be found. Aquila told Harold what was happening, and he suggested that Aisha may have gone to his mother's home because it was just across the street. So Aquila called over there and was told that Aisha wasn't there either. She said, "That's when I went into panic mode. I heard a car next door, I put shoes on, and ran outside." She called her mother, who told her to call the police. Police arrived at the home by 6:40 a.m., and the sheriff arrived a few minutes after that. They asked Harold and Aquila for photos of Aisha. Police also used canines early to track where Aisha had gone, and according to a Jet magazine article, Aquila said the dogs were unable to find anything but her own scent. Aquila said she was walking through the neighborhood screaming for Aisha, and the whole neighborhood was woken up by this around 7 a.m., and a lot of friends and family canceled their plans for the day to help search for Aisha. All that was found during the first day of the search was a mitten, which didn't belong to Aisha. Aquila said that no winter clothing was missing from their home. Local media jumped on the story, and this prompted the two drivers that we mentioned earlier to report their sightings of Aisha to the police.
It seems like the police took this pretty seriously, I guess, combined it with her age of being just 9 years old, which, like, obviously they should have, but it's good that the search started literally minutes after her mother discovered that she was missing. You know, they brought in all the stuff on the first day, conducted a pretty intensive search. I'm glad that they just didn't say, "Oh, she'll turn up." You know, it seems like they took it pretty seriously. Yeah, straight away.
Yes, that is definitely a positive. On February 15th, so the next day, candy wrappers were found in a shed at an upholstery business near where Aisha ran into the woods. Debbie Turner, who's the owner of the property, said that she found the items next to a tractor. A white Atlanta 1996 Olympics pencil, a green marker, and a Mickey Mouse yellow hair bow were also found. These items were identified as belonging to Aisha. Aisha's basketball team had been given treat bags with candy for Valentine's Day, and it's believed that is what the wrappers came from. Really makes me sad hearing, like, you know, the little Tweety Bird bag and the Mickey Mouse bow. And, like, these are the things she, like, thought to pack. The sheriff said, "What the pencil tells me is there's renewed hope now that we know she left the road. The pencil is unique to her, and her parents told my detectives that the items belong to her. It's great news, even if it's only a couple of items. Without question, it's a boost to the morale of the dedicated officers and volunteers who have searched and researched, and most importantly, the family." So there are some photos online showing where the items were found in the shed. Not anything overly compelling. It's kind of exactly what you'd imagine of, like, a dirt ground in an old big farm tractor.
And it looks and kind some, of like just
a lot
a messy,
of trash in the background.
Yeah, a messy shed with stuff Garage. Everywhere. It's actually kind of lucky that she noticed these few small belongings. Like, I guess, you know, I would notice if I found stuff like that in my garage, for example, but it's not like a neat, orderly shed where things are kept for a reason. It's just kind of where they store a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it also just looks like a place where how frequently were they really going in there. So, like you said, good they noticed it. Debbie would later say she didn't think the items would help the investigation until police went to her property on February 17th and asked to search it. Debbie said, "I know that the stuff shouldn't have been there, but we live so far south from where the girl lived that I never thought it might be hers. I just hope this helps find her, and I'm happy that it gives hope to everyone looking for her." Yeah, so good that she even thought to call it in.
Mm.
Also found in the shed was a photo of an unidentified girl. This part's so strange.
Oh, no.
There's been a lot of discussion online about who this girl is, and to this day, she's never been identified. So it's just a photo of
looks kind of like another, a school photo. Like the
yeah,
kid
like another little black girl school photo where they have you fold your arms on the table and smile.
She looks kind of dressed up and very neat. Like it's not a candid photo. It was taken at a school or some type of something like that.
Yeah. When I first, because I kind of forgot about this part of the story, I was wondering if like maybe, I don't know if I should say this for the end, but it just made me think like, why does she have this picture? Like, did this person that maybe lured her out, like, give her this picture trying to be like, oh, this is, like, your sister or something, trying to trick her in that sense of, like, this is your real family?
Some theories I've read is that she had – maybe she had some type of pen pal because her parents have said she had no access to the internet. So the only other way that she could have met someone maybe would be via a pen pal, which probably was more of a thing back then. So maybe she thought she was corresponding with this child when someone else really lured her out. I don't know.
That's true too. So Aisha's family didn't recognize the photo either, or the girl in the photo. And despite the picture being shared widely by news outlets, no one has ever come forward to identify the girl in the photo or where this photo came from. The sheriff said that detectives showed the picture to the family and they didn't recognize the girl, and neither did anyone at Falston School. He said, "Right now, we are not sure who it is a picture of or where it came from. The FBI has entered it into evidence."
And obviously that quote is back from 2000 when this happened. But as of 2024, she still isn't identified, I don't believe. That, like, I was reading on Reddit, there's still a bunch of discussions about this, subreddits. Like, as far as I'm aware and as far as I can tell, no one has ever identified this child, which is crazy in this day and age.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. The whole country needs to just be like, we're playing this picture on everyone's TVs, like emergency broadcast for 5 minutes, and everyone needs to see it and look at it.
Like, there's versions of the photo that are quite clear. Like, I'm sure people have kind of played around with it and, you know, lightened and brightened and done different things to it to make maybe it more identifiable. But it's not like it's a really blurry photo. I feel like you would absolutely know that child if, you know, I guess it's like the Opalika Jane Doe case that we covered too, where they had an actual photo of the Doe and no one could recognize her for years and years.
And it sucks because now it's like an older photo. Yeah. And who knows if it was even older at the time where maybe people who would have known this girl could be very old or passed away. So it could be something like that too. So after Aisha vanished, police took inventory of what was missing from her home. And they discovered that she had taken blue jeans with a red stripe and a white long sleeve shirt with a black pair of overalls. I always think it's interesting when it's like they surveyed the house to figure out what was missing. Would I be able to remember like what's missing?
Yeah, I wouldn't even know. Like, for my kids, if this was a scenario that I was in, maybe if it was something that they wore all the time, but like, yeah. I would have no way to inventory every single item of clothing that they have.
I guess when in situations like this, you usually assume the person or kid or whoever is going to take their more favorite things. Maybe that's kind of how people realize.
And my kids do have things. Like, I would say they wear 10% of their wardrobe 90% of the time. So I guess, you know, you could kind of do a process of elimination like that. But
yeah. Sheriff Crawford said that after detectives interviewed Aisha's classmates at Falston Elementary School, police think she may even have had some money in her purse. He said Aisha showed a few dollars to classmates on the last day that she was at school.
It's so heartbreaking. Like, she was obviously proud of a few dollars. Maybe she thought that she would be able to go and do whatever she was planning to do, meet up with this child in the photo, whatever her plans were, we don't know. But it's so heartbreaking that she showed the, you know, few dollars to these other kids. And like, I get that's a lot of money when you're nine, and especially a lot of money back in 2000. So it's just heartbreaking and so innocent and naive.
Yeah. I'm just like, did she really not tell anyone, like another little kid, anything? But I get it. They're like little kids. So
yeah.
Just like, what did she say? The search for Aisha was called off a week after she disappeared. The weather in the area at this time was said to be torrential rains and harsh wind with frigid temperatures. So, I mean, a week seems fairly soon to call off the search, but maybe the weather played into that decision. And it does seem like they did a pretty decent search right away. So maybe they're just calling it off in that area. So just for an example of like around that time, the morning that she went missing, the temperatures were only like 45 degrees Fahrenheit at 2:51 a.m. And by 4:51 a.m. it was 53. So, I mean, it was pretty cold out. Then the wind, especially, it got up to like 10 miles per hour, which isn't crazy, crazy windy, but still pretty blustery. But there was wind gusts around 4:50 a.m., which is when I think they said they saw her maybe on the highway around 4 a.m. So around 4:50 a.m., there was wind gusts up to 23 miles per hour. So like we were saying, just not great weather to be for a little child to be outside, anyone to be outside. So police said at the time that they'd spent 9,000 man hours looking for Aisha and that all their leads had been investigated. The Cleveland County Deputy Fire Marshal said, "We searched that area so thoroughly, we feel like she's not there." Police also said they received 300 leads by that point, but none of them were really viable. The sheriff said, "We've never really had that first good substantial lead." The Star reported that 60 to 70 volunteers worked from sunup to sundown looking for even a scent, only to turn up nothing. Aquila said, "I'm so thankful to those who have looked all day for Aisha, but I just want my baby home. I just want my baby back home with me."
And just to interject quickly too, where they talk about the scent, they didn't even find the scent because the weather hampered the use of dogs and things like that in terms of looking for Aisha because, and I'm not using the right terminology, but basically I'm just trying to explain how it works, is that the rain and the wind can lessen, the potency of a scent. I was listening to another podcast about this case and they likened it to kind of chewing gum. And then, you know, as you chew gum over time, it lessens, the flavor lessens. So it's,
yeah, makes sense.
Kind of
washes it away
and dilutes it almost. Like, I know I'm not using the right scientific terminology, but, you know, that is basically what happens. If it's not, obviously the strongest the scent will be is right after the person was last there. And if there's wind, if there's rain, all of those things lessen the ability for them to find the scent.
Yeah.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Gut stuff might be uncomfortable for you to talk about, but it's even more uncomfortable for you to deal with. And you have better things to do this year. Don't let your gut get in the way of that. Kick off the Year of the Habit and get science-backed digestive support during Ritual's New Year's sale. Their 3-in-1 clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotic help support a balanced gut microbiome. The delayed release capsule is designed to help reach the colon where probiotics can actually survive and grow, so you can focus less on your gut and more on sharpening your salsa dancing skills or whatever your 2026 goals are. Start a habit that sticks with 40% off your first month, plus a free gift with purchase at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The FBI and North Carolina's SBI got involved in the case in the month that Aisha went missing. Investigators said they believed Aisha had planned and prepared to leave for several days before she vanished. This observation was based on what Aisha had taken with her, some of her favorite belongings and clothes. One SBI agent said, "She's not your typical runaway." According to a spokesperson from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, most runaways are at least 12 years old. The FBI said that most children run away due to an issue such as a tumultuous home life or poor performance at school, and Aisha was not said to be experiencing any of those issues. FBI agent Rick Schaefer said, "It doesn't fit. She comes from a well-regarded family. She does very well in school." Sheriff Crawford said at the time, "Something caused her to leave the road. The worst scenario, I think, is that she's been abducted." In the months after Aisha vanished, her family conducted a media blitz in an attempt to keep her case in the public. They went on the Montel Williams show. Her case was also featured on America's Most Wanted and the Oprah Winfrey show. On August 3rd, 2001, which is almost 18 months after Aisha vanished, a black and beige backpack was unearthed by a construction worker named Terry Fleming. The bag was found 25 miles north of where Aisha was last seen and was less than 50 yards off Highway 18. Inside it was Aisha's name and her family's home phone number. So definitely hers, it seems.
Yeah, no argument that it was hers. Like, it was labeled as hers.
Terry said the police asked him not to tell the media any details about what he had found, but a nearby resident told the local Shelby Star newspaper that the backpack had been found wrapped in a plastic bag. And in an October 2010 profile on Good Morning America, Good Morning America reportedly said that it had been wrapped in trash bags. So much for keeping that a secret. After the backpack was found, Sheriff Dan Crawford said it no longer appeared that Aisha was just a runaway. He said the backpack was thrown out by a moving car, and it's highly likely now that this has involved foul play. I wonder how they came to think that. I mean, I guess it's, you would assume that, but they said it was less than 50 yards off the highway. Like, if I'm throwing a little kid's backpack out of a moving car, it's not going further than 5 feet. Like,
and even
they
when
think
they
it
say,
moved, maybe, or
when they say unearthed, that to me kind of indicates
it was buried in the brush.
But I don't know. Like, I could see it both ways. Maybe they threw it and it got covered by, you know, stuff like leaves or whatever. I don't know. Like, but unearthed to me sounds like it was dug up while they were doing this construction and someone had purposely buried it. But then also wrapping it in garbage bags, like, that would preserve the bag. I feel like, I don't know, it's a very unusual way for it to be found.
Yeah, maybe just, I don't know what kind of area it is. Maybe it just looked like trash and blew around a little.
I guess maybe it could have just been in, like, put in trash bags in an attempt for people just to think it was trash and no one would look in it.
Yeah. The backpack was sent to the FBI for further testing. And jumping ahead slightly, just because it fits in the story best here, but some of the backpack's contents were made public in 2018, and this was, like, really interesting, but the bag held a Dr. Seuss book called McElligott's Pool, which is from Aisha's library, but it also had a New Kids on the Block concert t-shirt that her mother said didn't belong to her. So where did the shirt come from?
And that the book was from the school, which leads me to believe Aisha probably put it in the backpack. Yeah, so I don't know, maybe someone had given her this t-shirt. Like, yeah, we obviously don't know why she had it in her backpack, but it's very interesting that her mother is adamant the shirt didn't belong to Aisha. It does look like maybe an adult shirt. Looks a bit big.
Yeah, you can't really tell what size in the picture. I was thinking maybe wherever she was taken, or maybe that's a shirt they gave the abductor, potential abductor, whatever, gave her to wear and then was, like, disposing of it as evidence. I don't know. Strange. Investigators have not said whether DNA or other testing had yielded any significant results at that time.
So the search for Aisha continued as the years went on, but all of the leads turned out to be dead ends. The FBI did release an age progress photo of her in 2005, and they placed the photo on 28 vehicles which belonged to North Carolina Waste and Water Company. So those vehicles were driving around out in the public, and that was kind of in an attempt to raise awareness about her case. Howard and Aquila also established a scholarship in Aisha's name for local students, and they also hosted an annual walk to raise awareness and money to keep the search for their daughter ongoing. So they've been in the media throughout the years. They've done things to keep the story as much as they can in the public. In 2013, Aquila spoke to the media outlet Jet, and she said that her daughter's disappearance had not gotten as much media attention over the years as some other missing children because Aisha was black. She said, missing white children get more attention and I don't understand why. I know if you ask them, they will say it's not racial. And she said, oh, really? I'm not going to argue because I have common sense. In 2016, Aquila spoke to the Shelby Star and she said that at that point, she still believed Aisha was alive. She said, I fully expect for her to walk through the door. And this is some information from that article and about how the family had kind of not moved on with time, but how their lives still had to carry on. It says, the Degrees still live in the same home as they did when Aisha went missing. Inside the living room is a testament to how important family is to the Degree family. Pictures of Aisha, their son O'Brien, a granddaughter and other family are on the walls. Some of the age progression photos created by investigators hang next to actual photos of Aisha as a young child. That's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Aquila said, this year has been hard. She said, you would think I'd get used to it, as in Aisha being gone. So that's still 16 years just after her daughter has disappeared and it's still just as hard as it was from day one.
Mm-hmm.
In February 2015, the FBI announced that they were re-examining the case and would be re-interviewing witnesses. A reward of up to $25,000 was offered for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for Aisha's disappearance. In May 2016, authorities shared information from a tipster that someone matching Aisha's description may have been seen getting into a distinctive vehicle along the highway where she was last seen. They described the car as an early 1970s model dark green Lincoln Continental or a Ford Thunderbird with rust around the wheel wells. At that time, they released photos of similar types of models of these cars. I agree, very distinctive, especially a 1970s model in the 2000s would have been pretty noticeable anyway, but these cars are quite distinctive.
Yeah, and they're really long. Like whenever I see one, I'm like, that car is so long.
Yeah. The Cleveland County Sheriff Alan Norman said this vehicle is right now considered a vehicle of interest and it was occupied two times on the day of her disappearance. It has been discovered by legwork by the federal office investigators along with the federal government. So that's crazy to me. 16 years later, they've been able to uncover this tip about this car being seen in the area twice that day. It's a long time after she disappeared for them to come out with this.
Yeah, but I'm like, why didn't they notice that back then?
Yeah, why did it take them 16 years to come out? Maybe someone...
Or did they just not put it out? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I've seen other cases where people are like, I didn't bring it up because I didn't think it was important. Now that I think about it, this has always played on my mind. So maybe it was something those lines.
And like when they're asked about it again, they're like, well, now that you're asking...
Or even like, they might have spoken to someone and they're like, I always thought that was weird. And they're like, why didn't you call it in? It's like that type of scenario.
Yeah.
Aquila spoke to the media that year, which was 2016, and said that O'Brien now had a daughter of his own. Aquila said, she's about six. She looks so much like Aisha did at that age and she'll do something and I'll just stop and look at her. In September 2017, the FBI announced that its Child Abduction Rapid Deployment, or CARD, team was in Cleveland County to assist in the investigation and to provide on-the-ground investigative technical behavioral analysis and analytical support to find out more about what happened to Aisha. The team worked alongside the FBI, the Sheriff's Office, and the North Carolina SBI for 10 days. The agencies also meet ongoing, they said, several times a month to go over the latest in the investigation. It said that in September 2017, local agents and investigators conducted approximately 300 interviews. So again, 17 years after Aisha disappeared, and there's still such a high level of investigation in the case.
Mm-hmm.
In November 2020, an inmate named Marcus Mellon, who had been convicted of sex crimes against children 6 years earlier, wrote a letter to the Shelby Star claiming that Aisha was murdered and he knew where to find her. So police and the sheriff's office obviously looked into this, but in February 2021, they told the media that these claims led to more dead ends. So I feel like there was a lot of media attention about this at the time. There always is when someone claims to know something, like even in the JonBenet case, where the guy in Thailand spoke about, like things like that. Anytime someone claims to know, it kind of stirs the pot up and creates a lot of
media
focus.
They're always liars.
Yeah, always. They just want to insert themselves and be either for their own benefit, like I'll tell you where Aisha is if you let me out of jail or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. So we are now at 2024. In March this year, Cleveland County Sheriff Alan Norman spoke to the media, and he said that advances in technology will help investigators crack this case eventually. He said, "We actually have things that aid us now that we didn't have 24 months ago, much less 24 years ago." Aisha's parents spoke to the media again in March this year. Aquila said, "We're hoping and we're praying that she's had a decent halfway decent life anyway, even though we didn't get to raise her. We've missed everything, but I don't care. If she walked in the door right now, I wouldn't care what I missed. All I want to do is see her." So at that time too, they released kind of in this year also, prior to September, they've released a few articles about advances in the case. One article I read said that they had been making significant progress. They didn't elaborate on what that was, but basically they did indicate and give an update that things were still happening in the case. So in the last week or so, literally, there has been a ton of movement in this case. We're now at September 19th. On September 10 and 11, so not even 2 weeks ago, 2024, police carried out searches at a home in Cherryville Road in Shelby. Search warrants were obtained, quote, "based on physical evidence directly connected to Aisha's disappearance." So at the time, it wasn't immediately clear what the police and investigators were looking for. There were so many rumors going on at the time. There was posts saying that a body had been found, that the home was being searched based on a deathbed confession of someone who lived there. There was a ton of photos of police at the house and them taking certain things from the property. So after they completed the search, Cleveland County Sheriff Alan Norman made a statement and said that they did not find a body while searching the property. So that was kind of a case of telephone and locals gossiping. Mm-hmm. They did say, though, that in the photos from the search, you could see officers and agents carrying boxes to and from a home, and that they also towed an older green vehicle from the property, which is so interesting based on the car that was apparently seen on the day that Aisha disappeared twice in the area.
Especially since it's green.
Yeah, it looks...
It's like a common color.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It doesn't look exactly like the cars that they sent the photos of, but I, like, you know, sometimes
it's
I don't
boxy.
Know a model of car. It's more boxy, but it is green. It's probably from around that time period. I absolutely agree they look similar. Like, for someone who isn't really, you know, or doesn't know much about cars, I would say, oh, yeah, okay, looks kind of similar, yep. I can absolutely see that it's definitely not totally different from the car they were looking for.
Yeah, definitely similar.
Yeah. So the car, when I saw the photos, it had been parked in like a garage. Again, it looked like there was a ton of kind of...
It was like hoarded, right?
Yeah, I was going to say hoarded. I was trying to be polite. but there was like a ton of garbage in the garage where it was stored. It was surrounded by like boxes and debris and stuff like that.
Had stuff on top of it.
It's like... not like anyone was using this car. It looks to me like that car had been parked in that location for a very long time. It hadn't been moved. Mm-hmm. That's just my... analysis of the situation.
No, I agree.
So we have learned that the Cherryville Road property that was searched belonged to the Deadman family. After police wrapped up their search and said that they didn't find a body, the family actually held their own press conference, and it was led by an attorney named David Teddy. The attorney said that more answers would be forthcoming once the search warrant is made public, which has now happened. It says that basically... The attorney said that a man named Roy Lee Deadmon was questioned by law enforcement on the day of the search, and he denied knowing any information about what happened to Aisha. David said they were able to supply information to police that supported that claim. He didn't really elaborate on what that was, but he apparently had an alibi maybe for the day that Aisha disappeared, or had some information to suggest he's not involved.
Mm-hmm.
He said that not only Roy Lee, but his wife, who is now 80, and their daughters and other family members were interviewed, and none of them have any information on what happened to Aisha. At the time that Aisha disappeared, the couple had three teenage daughters named Lizzie, Sarah, and Anna Lee. So, you know, not that much different in age to Aisha. You know, she was 9, maybe they were 13, 14, 15. You know, they were a few years older than her anyway.
Yeah.
The attorney said, "It is in my practice for the last 36 years to not do this, to not make public statements about cases that are pending. Now we don't have an actual case in a courtroom that's pending at this juncture. It's merely an investigation. But I feel compelled because of the rampant conjecture and speculation that has been happening in our community." So he goes on to address some of the rumors that were going around online. He said there's been no body found, let alone seven bodies. Some people are putting out there on social media that a number of bodies have been found, and that is not true. There is a statement on social media that Roy Dedman has confessed to having information of somehow being involved in the disappearance of Aisha, and that is false. So I feel like that was the deathbed confession, that he was dying, so he chose to tell police where Aisha was. He doesn't seem to be dying. He's elderly, but it doesn't seem like there was this sensationalized deathbed confession as was being speculated online.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about multiple bodies. I saw people speculating that there was maybe one body because they were like out digging around in the woods, it looked like. So people were wondering what they'd found there.
And I did see some of Aisha's family were making statements basically saying, please, like I know they're probably not working with this attorney, but they were also making statements saying, please don't sensationalize, don't speculate. When things are confirmed, they will be released. So, but yeah, I did see, like, it's, you know, when things happen in a town like this, everyone gossips. It's just human nature for everyone to be interested. Everyone, yeah, I heard this. This is what I heard.
Especially a case like this.
Yeah, that would have taken over their town for the past 24 years.
And a lot of it, I'm sure, is like good natured. A lot of, once it gets passed online and into all that, it can be much more toxic. But locally, nobody's trying to be malicious.
No. So. And that, like, everyone just wants to share information, like, hey, my aunt told me that they found six bodies. Like, everyone just always wants to be the first with the information. And they're not, yeah, I agree, not doing it maliciously. They're just doing it to try and pass on what they've heard. They don't want to be left out.
Yeah, I feel like people there, like, care about it.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So the attorney said, to his knowledge, no person has made any type of confession that they have any information about what happened to Aisha. He said he is not concerned just for the Dedmon family, but he's also concerned for Aisha's family. He said, I do not know her parents personally, but I do know a number of their relatives, and they are good and decent and honourable people. And they deserve better than what some people in this community have done recently by spreading false information that Aisha's remains have been found. I don't think the press will be notified about what happened to Aisha Degree until her parents are told first. So he then went on to basically tell people to stop speculating. He said, if you spread something that is not a fact, then you are participating in a disservice to Aisha Degree and her family, and a disservice to Roy Dedmon and his family. He went on to say that once the search warrant is made public, the connection to the Dedmon's property will become clear. He goes on to say, I think there will also be some information in the search warrant that will sadly link a person to the circumstances to Aisha's disappearance that is no longer living. And then he goes, it's very possible, not saying that the person was named in the search warrant that had anything to do with her disappearance, because I don't know any more that you do, but it's very possible that that person who's no longer here has the answer as to what happened to Aisha, and the answer may very well never be known. So quite a wordy statement.
Talking in circles.
Yeah, quite a wordy statement, not really saying much, but basically he's indicating that from what he knew at the time in the search warrant, there was someone else, and that person is now dead, which is very convenient for the Dedmon family, but that person is now deceased, and he is insinuating that that person may have information. So at the time, we didn't have the search document. We had no idea who he was talking about, or, you know, where this was going to go. But since then, they have released the search warrants. We've got them on the blog if you want to read them. They're dozens and dozens of pages long. The main information as a summary from them is that authorities now believe Aisha was a victim of a homicide, which is not really new news. They said at the time after they found her backpack that she was no longer just a runaway. I'm assuming that homicide was probably the main theory in terms of her case anyway. They said the Deadmans, who we mentioned, were subject to a search warrant because of familial DNA found from a hair strand on Aisha's undershirt, which came back to their daughter. They also said they executed additional search warrants in Vail and Charlotte. So this Cherryville Road property wasn't the only place that they searched at the time. They did search some additional areas as well. In the probable cause affidavit for each document, it says Aisha Degree was seen being pulled into a 1970s green Lincoln Thunderbird or similar vehicle. It also goes on to give some more information about the backpack that was found. It says a construction crew working in the area located the evidence double bagged in black garbage bags and turned it over to the Cleveland Sheriff's Office and noted that some of the items were identified as belonging to Aisha Degree and other items not belonging to Aisha. So then it goes on that the items were sent for analysis and the genealogical data narrowed the samples down to two individuals, one belonging to a man named Russell Bradley Underhill and another belonging to a family member who was one of the daughters of Roy and Connie Dedmon. So they are the Cherryville Road property owners where the house was searched and where the car was taken from. And at the time they also, at the time that Aisha went missing, they also owned a facility called the Northbrook Rest Home. It says, this is a quote from the affidavit. It says, laboratory analysis of collected DNA samples indicated the likelihood that the hair stem sample of Aisha Degree's undershirt is a person genetically identical to the DNA standard collected from Anna Lee Dedmon. Her name now is Anna Lee Dedmon Ramirez. I'm assuming she's been married. So she's referred to in the media sometimes as Ramirez, if you see that and you're wondering who it is. But Anna Lee Dedmon is one of the Dedmon daughters who was a teenager at the time that Aisha went missing. The search warrant for one of the other properties that Dedmon owned indicated that several years ago, a family saw Roy Lee digging a chest-deep hole on the property and that investigators observed a 6 to 8 inch dent in the ground, quote, where it was obvious that the ground had been disturbed. Additionally, the search warrant stated that I'm assuming they did look because they were digging and things like that. So maybe he had moved something. I don't know, but it does seem suspicious. Additionally, the search warrant stated that Roy Lee had padlocked rooms in the home that he was renting out. And he said to the renter that the rooms were locked because he had personal property in the rooms, which is weird.
Yeah.
The other person in the search warrants is Russell Underhill, as we mentioned. He is the other DNA evidence source. It's indicated in the documents that he was a resident at the Northbrook Rest Home at the time of Aisha's disappearance. So that is a home that was owned by the Dedmons at the time. It says
What's a rest home?
I'm assuming it's like a nursing home.
Like an elderly home?
Or a home for people with needs, like someone – like I don't – that article I say goes into more detail, but I feel like he was just unable to care for himself. So it says, according to the documents, a Cleveland County Department of Social Services employee spoke with deputies in 2023 and they revealed that Roy Dedmon was involved in Russell Underhill's care and that they recalled Roy sending one of his daughters to transport patients in an unreliable vehicle to and from a hospital. There's been a whole bunch of new articles coming out. As we mentioned, this has just literally happened in the last week. I've read an article today where they've spoken about the items that were searched from the property. From the properties, I should say. It says Annalise's house was one of the ones that were searched. She had a home in Charlotte. They also searched the Northbrook Rest Home, which is where Russell Underhill was living at the time. They took items including phones, computers, disposable cameras, notebooks and journals, a tooth in a Ziploc bag, a pair of earrings, a rifle, car, which is the green car, SD cards, paperwork, other records, VHS tapes, and more. So this is what we were referring to earlier in the episode where there does still seem to be a whole bunch of old evidence laying around that they will now have to search through that may or may not be related to Aisha's case, but they've got the car, they've got computers, they've got journals, they've got all those type of things that maybe will lead them to some answers about what happened.
Yeah.
So in the search warrants, they did emphasize that Aisha's family is not aware of where she is and they had given numerous statements and passed polygraph tests in relation to the case because obviously the family is always the first group to be looked at and they've stated that they do not believe at all that her family are involved in the disappearance, which I would also agree with at this point.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, the documents are really long. If you want to read all the kind of legal jargon, I'll put them on the blog. But from what I have determined is that Roy Lee Dedmon's attorney is kind of insinuating that Russell Underhill may be the person that was involved, that he is now dead, which is convenient because you know, I guess the blame can be placed on him. But it is interesting that he and Anna Lee were linked via DNA to the belongings that Aisha had.
So Anna Lee is Roy's daughter.
Yeah, so Anna Lee was one of the teenage daughters of the Dedmond family. She was said to have helped them with the work at the rest home where Russell Underhill was living. I know it's a lot, like there's a whole bunch of names in this, but basically the Dedmond family live at the home or the homes that were searched. The car was taken from the Dedmond home. Someone saw Roy Lee Dedmond apparently digging a big hole on his property. They have now since searched Anna Lee's home because her hair was found on some of Aisha's clothing. So it seems like...
But they're trying to say it could still be Russell because Anna Lee worked at the home that Russell lived at and also maybe transported him sometimes.
Yeah.
So maybe Anna Lee's hair could have gotten on him and then could have gotten on Aisha somehow. Seems like kind of a stretch, but...
Yeah. I'm just looking up now about the Northbrook rest home.
I was just trying to look that up too.
So the Northbrook Rest Home says it's basically a senior care service. Yeah. So I'm assuming it's for people who need additional care either because
it's like due assisted to their age. Living.
Yeah, exactly. Assisted living or due to their circumstances. It is a very fast-moving case at the moment. We have tried to kind of summarize the search warrant documents. I have no doubt that more and more information about the people named in them will come out over the coming weeks. There's been an article just come out today that actually talks about the autopsy of Russell Underhill. So he, as we mentioned, is the one who the Dedmond family attorney is kind of insinuating knew more about Aisha. So he was 54 when he died in 2004, which means he would have been 50 at the time that Aisha disappeared. He suffered from depression, alcohol, and substance abuse, and he was a Vietnam vet. He was last seen on Christmas Day in 2004, and he was found dead 2 days later, slumped over the couch in the living room in a pair of shorts. They did not find evidence of a homicide or unusual circumstances, but his cause of death was never determined. He had coronary artery disease, but there was no indication of a heart attack, and he had older brain injuries. So the article talks about past caregivers that he had threatened. So he was obviously quite a volatile person that required a high level of care, which is why he was in this rest home. So it says, this article from today says that he had been under the care of Roy and his wife, Connie Dedmond, on and off for a number of years. Roy Dedmond was actually listed as Russell's emergency contact. So they clearly knew each other. I feel like it's not totally unreasonable to think that he would have had some contact with Anna Lee. We know that she apparently transported him at one point. So they are definitely intertwined.
I guess that, like, my confusion comes in is like, why were specifically they caring for him? You know?
Mm.
I don't know. But I found, I was just looking up stuff about the rest home, and I found something on Reddit posted 20 hours ago. Someone found an article about problems at the Northbrook Rest Home. It's an article from 1998. It's kind of aroundish then, about the community's thoughts on the rest home. It says, Wesley Gross stated that he lives on Northbrook School Road. He stated that he and his wife were riding horses on the shoulder of the highway one evening. He stated that a pickup truck nearly hit both of them, so they followed it. He stated that the driver and passenger were drunk, and the driver resides at Northbrook Rest Home. He stated that this vehicle is unregistered, the driver didn't have a license, and there was not insurance on the vehicle. He stated that residents from the facility come to their homes asking to use the telephone. So basically it goes into other things like that, where it doesn't seem like they were super, like, I get in these homes, they're not like prisoners, but it seems like they were out able to do whatever they want, drinking and driving without licenses. This whole article is basically about how they were generally a nuisance to the town. Another person named Shirley Bristol stated that her daughter is a resident of Northbrook. She stated that she was speaking on behalf of the people of Northbrook. She stated that there are numerous violations and she does not understand why Northbrook Rest Home is able to stay open. She stated that they appreciated any help that the commission could provide.
One other kind of interesting tidbit in this is that Roy Lee Dedmond's property at Cherryville Road is less than 6 minutes away from where Aisha was last seen by the witnesses. And it's also en route to the Northbrook Rest Home. So very, very close to where she went missing, essentially, is where the property was.
Yeah. Seems like there's going to be a lot of finger pointing between the two parties.
Yeah. I feel like it's very, very convenient that Russell is dead. Obviously, the attorney is working for the Dedman family. It's in their best interest to not be involved in the case. But for the police to be executing search warrants 24 years later, to still be seizing all that information, all that documentation and materials, they must have quite a lot to be able to do that.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
In terms of the theories about what happened to Aisha, I had actually written some of these before the search warrant documents released, and they've now said that she is likely a victim of homicide. The initial theories that have always been discussed online is that she got off the road when the motorist spooked her, she got lost and injured and passed away in the elements. I feel like that likely didn't happen now, especially knowing what we know. The other main ones are that Aisha was abducted either from a passing car or by someone living in the area. And it kind of ties into, why did she leave the house? Was she kind of catfished by maybe a pen pal who could have been the person in the photo? I just feel like she had to have a reason to be sneaking around and
she's
out of the house.
She's definitely lured.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like she was lured.
Out of the house.
And I just need to know how. Apparently, her parents have said she had no access to the internet, which is would have been even harder. You know, like back in 2000, the internet was definitely not as readily available. They didn't have a computer. I'm assuming the kids had very limited internet access at school. She didn't have a phone, any of that. So for her to have, for someone to find her online would have been a lot more difficult. I feel like there was some other way that she was lured out of the house.
But even if she had like a pen pal, would her parents not notice her getting mail and writing letters and sending mail?
Yeah.
Or like maybe they're hiding notes in a spot?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I feel like the pen pal theory maybe has more credence because of the photo that was found. Like, why otherwise would she have a photo of this random child unless it's someone that she thought she was somehow communicating with?
But even if that was the case, so if she thinks she's writing to this little girl, what would still prompt her to leave? Like, you know, what did this alleged little girl say where she was like, you need to like pack up some clothes and get out of your house in the middle of the night? Also, how'd she know what time to wake up? Did she have an alarm? Like, I have so many questions just about the logistics of all of it.
Yeah, and the other kind of, this is not a theory as such, but there's been a lot of discussion online about if the things that were found in the shed were staged and that Aisha was never actually in the shed. Like, why did she leave her Mickey Mouse bow? Why did she leave the photo? Mm-hmm. Were those things placed there so that people would think she was in that area when she'd actually been abducted? I don't know. It's an interesting discussion. It does seem strange to me that she apparently discarded these things, like the pencil. Mm-hmm. Why? Why is she throwing these things out in the shed?
Like, maybe it was dark and she lost them.
Yeah, I guess. But then why? Yeah, I don't know. Why? Maybe she was rummaging through her bag looking for more candy and they fell out. Yeah, I don't know. But I wouldn't also be surprised if those things were staged in an effort to throw people off where she actually ended up. I don't personally think this was a stranger abduction. I feel like absolutely she was lured out by someone for a reason. She had a reason to be leaving the house at, you know, let's estimate 3 a.m. on a rainy, windy, stormy night. I just feel like someone lured her out there and knew she was going to be out there. I don't think this was just a stranger who was driving along the road and saw her and took her. I feel like someone knew she was going to be there and abducted her.
They could have still been like essentially a stranger, but it wasn't like a crime of opportunity by a stranger.
Someone who
planned and lured her out.
And someone who was not known to Aisha, they lured her under the guise. Like maybe, and I know that you were mentioning why would she leave the house. Maybe whoever she'd been communicating with had written her a note saying, hey, meet me at 5 a.m. here and we will go to, you know, somewhere fun. Like, I don't know what things are in the area, like a park or a theme park or a, you know, whatever, something fun that a kid would love to do.
Or maybe, you know, tricked her that she needed, that the other fake child or whoever needed help or something, because it seemed like Aisha was a nice girl who would probably want to help someone.
So I feel like now, especially that the search warrant documents are released, it's pretty clear that Aisha was likely abducted, probably by someone very close in the community, for the reason maybe that the person was just deceptive and was looking to harm a child.
It's so sad. It's just like, I hope that they're able, it seems like they're getting close where they might be able to kind of pinpoint who did it, but I hope that we're still, and her family is still able to get more answers as to like all the logistics of everything, of like, how did this person find her? How were they communicating? Like, what was the story? Like, I hope that they're able to figure out, or the person tells them that information. I don't know.
I know that we've mentioned too that Russell Underhill seemed to have some issues. He was an alcoholic. He seemed quite volatile, quite abusive. But I really, just the vibe I'm getting, like, I very well could be wrong, but especially that this green car was found at the Deadman property that they had obviously stashed and, you know, hadn't used for probably decades. I just feel like the Russell Underhill thing is likely,
it's like a scapegoat.
Yeah absolutely. Like, I don't know, maybe, or he could, you know what, he could have even been in it with the Deadman family, like maybe
been together,
they could have done it together, and now that he is passed, it's very convenient that they can blame it on him. But it does seem to me like the Deadmans were likely involved in some way, based on the legalities, the legal documents that we've got, the evidence that they've released that they have. It does seem like they appear to have something to hide,
and I think it'd be much more likely for her to get the daughter's hair on her by being in their vicinity versus like somehow this guy having the daughter's hair on him and then that transferring to Aisha.
Yeah. I do feel like this is one investigation where it seems like they have been really thorough. We often talk about, you know, investigations that are botched and they lose evidence and evidence degrades over time. But for them to be able to DNA test a hair that they found 20 whatever years ago, to have preserved it, to still be able to test. And I feel like that's what the sheriff was referring to earlier this year, where he said basically we've had DNA advancements in the past 24 months, let alone, you know, what we've had in the last 24 years. So it seems to have been such a thorough and ongoing investigation, which is sometimes rare in these cases.
Yeah, I agree. It seems promising now, where it didn't seem like there was really any hope for a long time.
Yeah. So as we get more information, maybe about the people in the search warrants, maybe, you know, about the likelihood that they were involved, we may be able to do another update episode. But that is kind of it up to date in terms of the chronological case of Aisha, where we're at now, what we know. As of the time of recording, that is a summary of everything that's happened in her case.
Yeah. If anything big happens between now and when this comes out, I'll put in a clip or something. But if some other stuff does happen between right now, which is September 19th, we'll talk about it when we, in the next episode or something, maybe next two episodes, just because we had to back record two episodes. But we will talk about it. I'll put in a clip if anything else happens between now and the release of this episode. But also make sure you follow us on Instagram, because we'll definitely post about it.
I feel like the main updates that could happen in this case is that arrests are made or that her body is found. I don't know. I just feel like it will still be a process, especially after this amount of time, for things to happen.
So that's really it for this episode. Up to this point, like we said, there might be more updates, who knows. But that's it for this episode. Everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com. Make sure you're following us on Instagram, because we'll post any updates there for sure also, at True Crime Society on Instagram. If you want to follow our personal accounts, mine is stephsum_olivia's_tcsolivia. We're also on Patreon now, so you can listen to any of the episodes ad-free, and we also release the regular episodes a day earlier, and there's an additional weekly bonus episode, so if you subscribe to Patreon, you'll essentially be getting two episodes a week without ads, and we have some little community chats on there as well, which are nice, so check us out on there, and all the usual stuff. If you could just share the podcast either with some friends or your Instagram stories to help get the word out, it's a big help to us. And obviously leave us some positive reviews and nice comments. Someone left a review saying that they appreciated me talking about my toilet situation because they never knew that about toilets. So I'm glad my suffering has helped someone. I'm always happy to help. But yeah, that is it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out.